helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. After the 2020 and 2022 elections, people should not be surprised that the 2024 elections are going to be a battle, both legal and tactical. While most of the attention appears to be on the presidential race, there is a potential for almost any race to generate a legal challenge and a court to finally decide. From a tactical standpoint, I expect many races to be battles rather than gentlemanly competitions. You may not have noticed, but there are those already preparing the battle space in order to give themselves and their candidates an advantage when the first volley of ballots are cast. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And of course, you know, the United States is a republic, and each of the states are republics, which means that we elect people to represent us. The sovereign power rests in the people collectively, and we hire representatives to exercise that power for us. And that makes voting very important and makes the people overseeing their elected employees very important. And as we approach another election that is bound to be contentious, that's bound to have its issues, should we not be preparing the battle space a bit ourselves? Now, most of the focus has been on political parties, right? The donkeys versus the elephants, and who's preparing the battle space best. That's not what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about preparing the battle space to make sure that the elections are as free, fair, and transparent as possible. That the people who are voting are legal to vote, and that everyone who can legally vote gets a chance to vote. And then it's up to them whether or not they vote. Then once those votes are cast, that the ballots are counted, they're counted accurately, they're counted transparently so that people can see them. And yes, I believe they should be audited as well. A lot of people freak out about the idea of auditing an election. I think it should be standard practice every election cycle. I've told the story before when I was a deacon in a church, and my responsibility was I oversaw the money. I didn't oversee the collections. I oversaw the spending of the money, right? We had a bookkeeper. I oversaw the bookkeeper, and we put in place processes to make sure that all our transactions were accurately recorded and they were transparent. And every year, each and every year, we went through an audit. We would take people from the church who would come in, and they would audit the books. They'd look at the books. They'd ask questions about, why we did this thing rather than that thing. They would see a check stub, and they'd want to see the bill that paid it, or vice versa. And we had to provide all this information. And yeah, we sometimes found mistakes that we had made, and we worked to put in place processes that would prevent those mistakes from happening in the future. So I can't say that an audit is fun. They are extremely useful. They're a great way to catch small mistakes before they become large mistakes. It's why I think they should be part of each and every election cycle. And trust me, there's little that feels as good as standing in front of the congregation at our annual meeting, or I should say sitting there, while other people stood up and said, yes, we've looked at the books, and you know, Paul and the bookkeeper, they did a great job. They had all the records straight. We found no problems in anything that was done, and we are more than satisfied that everything is above board. Great feeling to have that, which is why I'm kind of strange, why people really don't like audits. I understand the idea of an audit is scary, but if you're trying to make sure you're doing the right thing, it should be something worthwhile doing. By the way, I do make an exception with IRS audits only because, well, that's not me asking myself to be audited to double check myself. That's the federal government coming saying, we don't have any probable cause you've done anything wrong, but we want to double check anyway. That's a whole nother kettle of fish. I'm talking about auditing elections. But as I said, already the battle space where these fights are going to be taking place, both legal and tactical, it's already being shaped. It's already being manipulated in favor of a particular candidate or a particular political party, depending on where you are and what election you're looking at. For example, in the Secretary of State of Alabama, Wes Allen, has already sent out a warning because they found two organizations sending out mass mailers with pre-filled voter registration forms. From what I've found out, there are two organizations, the Voter Participation Center and the Center for Voter Information, and both of them apparently contacted the Secretary of State's office because they plan to send out mailers to Alabama citizens with these pre-filled out voter registration forms. Now, in response, the office said that I strongly disagree with the group's plan to mass mail our citizens. They've pushed against it. The Voter Participation Center was launched originally as Women's Voices, Women's Vote, Women Vote, and they targeted the single woman vote. Again, a very strongly Democratic-leading voting bloc. Now, again, this really shouldn't surprise you then that this group was founded with the help from John Podesta, former chief of staff of former President Bill Clinton. And, well, they've been accused, or at least they've been scrutinized for trying to register animals, dead people, infants, and felons, all people not eligible to vote. Now, listen, I don't have a problem with a partisan organization trying to get people registered and even trying to register them for their party. I tend to agree with the Alabama Secretary of State. I certainly would not fill out a voter registration form that appeared to me in the mail, especially one that was already pre-filled out for me. That just smells wrong. But that comes back to we the people being smart enough to say, if I want to vote, I can register to vote. If I get a form letter, and again, I don't care if it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, Constitution Party, any of these parties, I'm not submitting it because it smells fishy. It smells wrong. But it is an example of attempting to shape the battle space, to prepare the battle space. See, if you get more people registered to one party than another, that party has more contact points for get out the vote activities, to be able to go out and say, okay, you've registered, come on, vote for us, come on, you registered for us, vote for us, come on, let's go, we'll pick you up, we'll put you in buses, we'll whatever has to be done. It may be legal, but it's also, again, it's preparing that battle space. Now, am I suggesting that the Republicans should have something about registering mailboxes? No, I'm not prepared to become the evil I rail against. But on the other hand, it's important that the Republicans make people aware of this, saying these organizations, you realize these organizations are trying to coerce you to register for their party, to be in their party. So they have greater numbers. So they have greater influence. Now, if you want to be a member of their party, that's your decision. Do you want to be coerced into being a member of that party? Or do you want to decide for yourself what party you should be part of? Hopefully you also remember the Zuckerbucks, right? The hundreds of millions of dollars from Mark Zuckerberg and his wife that were used to shape the battle space of the 2020 election by giving money to election officials and giving a significant percentage more to officials in Democratic leading districts than in Republican leading districts. It was an attempt to shape the battle space to say, if I can get more Democrats registered than Republicans, they have an advantage. If I can do more get out the vote work in Democrat leading districts than Republican leading districts, then that gives them an advantage. I'm not saying that the Republicans do that, but we see it and we need to be aware, we need to bring it forward. Now, what's interesting is last month, the Urban Milwaukee revealed that one county that that Joe Biden won by nearly 40 points in 2020 was recently offered over $750,000 election grant from this organization known as Cities Forward. Now, this organization touts itself to be a nonpartisan effort focused on helping cities around the country make participation in the democratic process a priority. Yeah, something smells wrong. Something smells absolutely wrong. Now, the Milwaukee Election Commission says these funds will be used to purchase new election equipment, things like voting machines and ballot tabulators, among other things. Okay. We also found out that both the Milwaukee Election Commission and the Milwaukee Public Library also accepted $250,000 grants from Cities Forward. And again, these they're supposedly for nonpartisan public education campaigns. But then when you find out that Cities Forward is founded by George Soros, not exactly known as a nonpartisan figure, not exactly known for using his money to fund nonpartisan activities. In fact, he's known mostly for funding Marxist and leftist and socialist activities throughout the country and throughout the world. Now, some like others, I don't see Mr. Soros as the boogeyman. Simply his participation doesn't taint and make evil these organizations. But it certainly doesn't lead me to believe it's nonpartisan. It'd be like saying, the Clintons and the Obamas got together and decided to spend a boatload of money from their foundations to run get out the vote campaigns, and finding that, oh yeah, by the way, they're focusing them on places where Democrats tend to win. It's not nonpartisan. I'm not sure if that's the case here, but it certainly does. It's worth asking the question. Is Mr. Soros and these organizations in Alabama, are they trying to shape the battle space to give them the best advantage come November? That's what it seems like to me. I think they learned a lesson from Mark Zuckerberg in the ability to use private funds to give them to election organizations and kind of shape the battle space that way. Since apparently there's actually evidence that both the Milwaukee Election Commission and the Public Library accepted the grants they accepted was, among other things, not just public education and civic connection, but to encourage residents to register to vote, to sign up to vote by mail, and to vote early. Now, I don't have problems with voting early as long as it's not ridiculously early. And I don't even so much have problems with trying to get residents to vote. My issue is we're more worried about quantity of voters than quality of voters. But if you're promoting vote by mail, if you're encouraging people to sign up for vote by mail, whether they need to or not, that seems like you're setting the battlefield up for more corruption, more fraud, and other malfeasance that we saw in the 2020 elections. If you find the movie 2000 Mules, you see evidence of what certainly looks like suspicious activity. And the question is, do we want that again in 2024? Or more, maybe the better question for today is, are these organizations shaping the battle space so that they will be able to do that? The same way COVID was used to shape the battle space in 2020, are these organizations using their money to help do the same thing to bring in vote by mail, which can more easily be manipulated? And I'm going to talk a bit more about that, but I got to take a break first. Before I go, are you wondering how you can improve your study, how you can take the next steps? What should you do next? I get asked that a lot, right? I speak at, what can we do? Well, I built a little wizard that may help. It's kind of a little planning wizard. You go to constitutionstudy.com/wizard and you answer a few questions, right? The basic things. When was the last time you read the Constitution? How easy was it? What are your plans for the future? What types of things would you like to do? And you enter that in the system along with your name and your email address. And the system will start sending you ideas based on your answers. It may suggest a book to read or a place to visit. And I'm updating it whenever I can to see as I learn about new organizations and I learn about new tools. And it's a nice way to kind of maybe get some ideas. Some of those ideas will be free. Some of them you may have to pay for, at least a nominal fee, but it's a way to get those questions answered. So again, go to constitutionstudy.com/wizard, answer a few questions, and then see if maybe some of the suggestions that pop up will really help you improve your study and prepare to be a better citizen. I mentioned just a minute ago about how COVID was used to shape the battle space of the 2020 election. And many people are still dealing with the long-term effects of not COVID, but also the so-called vaccines. People are dealing with shedding, with long COVID, and they're concerned about getting infected with the spike protein. It's toxic, it's inflammatory, it could be a long-term health problem. Well, the wellness company has come up with a solution. They have, whether you're vaccinated or not, you can protect yourself against the spike protein and help flush it from your system if you've already got it. It is backed by documented research. It is vetted by the chief medical board of the wellness company, and it's manufactured right here in the United States. It's called Spike Support. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off any of their products and 25% off your first month of membership if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, go to americaoutloud.shop. You can find the ad for Spike Support or any of the products we support at the Wellness Company. Check it out. They've got some other products that are really kind of nice. And when you put your cart together, use the code OUTLOUD when you check out. You'll get 25% off your product. And if you decide to join the Wellness Company, they'll also give you 25% off your first month of membership, but only if you use that code out loud.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at the Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to outloudcare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on americaoutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, americaoutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Well, the year 2024 must be the year of the Patriot, and americaoutloud.news will equip you with all the information you need to give new meaning to the words Patriot Act. For our actions always ultimately define our words. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're talking about preparing the election battle space. That's right. The 2024 election is going to be a battle. And I don't simply mean between Democrats and Republicans, between donkeys and elephants. I mean between the people who want votes to be free, fair, and transparent, and those who want to win at any cost. Now, I talked before the break, I was talking about some of the groups funded by Soros and others that are encouraging people to not simply register, but to request a mail-in ballot in Wisconsin, specifically apparently the Milwaukee area. And mail-in ballots are dangerous. And they're dangerous for this idea of what's called chain of custody. I talked about this before, but let me talk about it again. So when my wife and I vote, we go down to the county courthouse because that's where our polling place is. We generally vote a little early. So we do it because it's not as crowded and it's easier. My wife's in a wheelchair. It's easier not dealing with the crowds. So we go in and we show IDs. She shows her driver's license, my driver's license. We get ballots. We actually get these little cards because we use an electronic system. We get in line. We walk up to a polling machine, and the poll worker takes our card, sticks it in the machine, gets us signed in, and then we vote. And then once we're done, we get the little thing that says we're done and the little piece of paper, and we take it over and we hand it to another election official who scans it for being registered and paid and all that. We voted. The important point of that, from the time the ballot is issued until the time the ballot is counted, it is never outside of our control. Let me say it again. From the time the ballot is issued until the time it is counted, that ballot is never outside the control of me or my wife in her case. Compare that with mail-in voting. A ballot is issued. It's issued to you. It's usually got a serial number on it that's linked to you, but then it's dropped in the mail. It is outside of your control. It's outside of the election commission's control. It goes through the mail. It gets to you. You fill out the mail-in ballot. You do all that stuff, whatever's required by your state's law. You place that back into a mailbox or a drop box where, again, it is outside of your control and it's outside of the election commission's control. It then either gets mailed to the election commission or, in the case of a drop box, it eventually gets picked up by a worker who takes it to the election commission, where it is then counted. But you see, there are two points where that ballot is outside of the control of either an election official or the person that ballot has been assigned to. Those are two opportunities for fraud. Whether it's, somebody doesn't, picks up the ballot and doesn't let it get to its proper destination, or once it is cast, someone who then either manipulates it or based on location and anticipated political tendencies, either doesn't deliver it or does deliver it. And again, these aren't outrageous. We've seen these. We saw this in the 2020 election. We saw mail carriers with hundreds, sometimes thousands of ballots in their cars that had not been delivered. Ballots have been filled out. So that's why I've only voted by mail once in my entire life. I've been voting since I was, technically I voted when I was 20 because on my 18th birthday, it was after the recent election. So I've been voting for decades, and once did I vote by mail. And the only reason I did that is I was physically out of the state. I lived in upstate New York. I was in North Carolina for weeks. I had no opportunity to vote except by mail. And in fact, actually, I think it was 2012, New York Times did an article where they found that the rejection rate of mail-in ballots was twice that of in-person ballots. Now, the numbers are very small, right? Approximately 1% of in-person ballots were rejected, and 2% of mail-in ballots were rejected. So you have to take that with a little bit of salt as well. Well, what does that have to do with today? The Pennsylvania State Conference of the NAACP sued the then acting Secretary of State of Pennsylvania because in the November 2022 election, approximately 10,000 mail-in ballots were rejected. They were not accepted because they either had incorrect or missing dates on them. Now, Pennsylvania law requires that mail-in ballots have both a signature and be dated before they're sent in. And apparently they had 10,000 ballots that were either had no date on them or the date was it was incorrect for some reason. Now, the NAACP argued that the mail-in ballots were valid even though they were missing, they had missing dates or they had incorrect dates, and they should be, even though they violated Pennsylvania law. Now, what's interesting is this actually goes back to an earlier lawsuit filed by, I think it was the Pennsylvania Republican Party, that claimed that these undated and incorrectly mailed ballots were being counted and that they needed to be rejected. A lower court agreed. If it doesn't match the law, these are invalid ballots, they should not be counted. It was appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which agreed that the Pennsylvania law requiring that envelopes for mail-in ballots be both signed and dated with a valid date was perfectly legal, perfectly constitutional, and must be followed. Now, again, what we see here is we see, well, both the Republican Party and the NAACP trying to shape the battlefield, the battle space for the 2024 elections. Now, one side said we need to follow the law. Making sure that your ballot is signed and properly dated is not an undue burden to vote by mail, whereas the NAACP apparently stated that, well, sure, they didn't follow the law, but we should count them anyway. Again, both of them are trying to shape the battle space. So I said it's not a one-party situation. We need to be aware of these things. Now, again, Pennsylvania, it seems like right now, based on the opinion of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, they say, yes, the law is fine. We need to make sure that that we can do signature verification and that they be dated properly. Now, I don't know what was wrong with some of these 10,000 mail-in ballots. How many of them just had no date, and how many of them, maybe they got the date wrong. But let's face it: when you're talking about a burden to voting, signing the envelope, putting the proper date in, that's not exactly asking a lot of somebody who's trying to vote. Now, out in Montana, the issue is different. The Montana legislature recently passed four voter reform laws. They wanted to change some of the voting, and for those four of, I don't know how many they actually passed, were actually found unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court. Now, I know a lot of people would read that and immediately go, oh my God, what's going on? Well, like I tell you, go back to the source, go back to the original document. I actually found the decision of the court. And let me summarize it. So there are four bills in question here, HB 506, HB 176, HB 530, and SB 169, all of which were passed during the 2021 Montana legislative session. Now, the problem appears to be, at least I think three of these, the Montana Constitution requires a qualified elector to be 18 years old or older. Right, simple enough, not one thing. The problem is, let's start with HB 506. If you were under 18 but going to be 18 by election day, you could register to vote. So if you're 17 years old and your birthday is before Election Day, you could register at the age of 17 because by Election Day, you would be able to vote. HB 506 changed that. HB 506 said, no, you could not register until you are actually 18 years old. Now, HB 176 dealt with Election Day registration. See, the Montana legislature enacted that back in 2005, which means you could walk up to a voter booth, vote on Election Day and register right then and there. Personally, I think that's a bad idea, but the people of Montana disagreed. In 2014, there was a referendum to eliminate Election Day registration, and it lost by a 14-point margin. So the apparently people in Montana are happy with Election Day registration. Well, HB 176, one of the bills we're talking about, eliminated Election Day registration for all but a select categories of people. It actually moved the registration deadline to noon the day before the election. The Montana Supreme Court said, nope, that violates the Constitution as well. Let's look at SB 169. If you wanted to vote in Montana, you needed to show a photo ID, something like a driver's license or a student ID, that actually had the elector's name and phone and photo, or you could include a utility bill, a bank statement, a paycheck, something with your name and address on it. Now, the purpose of showing ID at the polling location was to make sure that the name, the person that was claiming to vote, was actually the name that was on the ID, to make sure they were actually the person registered to vote. Now, SB 169 tried to change these requirements, saying, well, you could have a primary ID, such as a driver's license, a U.S. passport, a Montana concealed carry permit, but other IDs, such as, student IDs, they were now considered a class of what are called secondary IDs. They would require the elector to show that ID plus the additional documentation, such as, like I said, a utility bill, a bank statement, or government document that listed the person's name and address. So, if you had a driver's license, a carry permit, a passport, you had a primary ID, life was good. If all you had was a student ID, then you also had to have something that showed that you lived where you claimed to live in order to be eligible to vote in that district or that precinct. And again, Montana's Supreme Court said no. I'm not entirely sure why. I didn't get into it that deeply, but that's what the court decided. Now, I want to take a look at HB 530, and it's actually Section 2 that was in question. And this is the one that really got my attention. Right? It would instruct the Secretary, I'm assuming the Secretary of State, to promulgate rules that would not allow anyone to accept a pecuniary benefit, a monetary benefit, in order to assist a voter by returning their ballot for them. Now, I'm not sure what the Supreme Court found unconstitutional about this. But what it is saying is that, listen, if you collect, for example, my wife has, her condition makes it difficult for her to use the voting machines. So I often assist her. The poll watcher, the poll worker, the election official has her sign a form that says she authorizes me to be in the booth with her to assist her in voting. And then we're off to the races. I get no monetary benefit for it. If we, if someone were to pick up a ballot, let's say someone goes to a nursing home, or as one of the groups that sued claimed that Native Americans, people with disabilities, and other voters rely on organized groups to help them deliver their voted ballots to the election officials. Under HB 530 Section 2, they would not allow to be paid for that. And again, for some reason, the court found that unconstitutional. Again, I didn't read into the details. I haven't gotten all through that. But what we see is a shaping of the battlefield. We see a shaping of the, in Montana, What's the vote going to be like? Okay. You could, the registration questions, I don't have an issue with. You know, if you can vote, if it's legal for you to vote under the Constitution, you, as long as you will be legal at the point of voting, I don't see where registering early is a problem. I personally dislike same day registration, election day registration, but I'm not a resident of Montana, so I don't have a say in that. The photo ID, you know, I'm pretty much, I like photo IDs, and I'm not entirely sure what was wrong with saying, listen, we're going to move the student ID to a requiring some other proof of residence, because I don't see a student ID. Student ID doesn't require, to get a student ID, you don't have to be a resident. You have to, don't have to prove you're a resident, but the Supreme Court didn't. These are all attempts to shape the battle space so that when the election comes, who will be registered? Who will be able to vote? Will, you know, who will, when you show up to vote, will be able to vote because they have a photo ID or they have other supporting documentation. This is all part of shaping that battle space. Okay, I have another break to take. Before I go, though, you know, Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, then a provider that shares your values. They offer top 4G and 5G coverage using all the networks on all the towers that the other carriers do. Their customer support is 100% U.S.-based, and I can tell you from personal experience, they are great to work with. They support organizations like Turning Point USA, the Susan B. Anthony List, Fold of Honor, and yes, the Constitution Study. So stop spending your wireless dollar with organizations that try to destroy our rights. Spend it with people who want to protect your rights. Go to patriotmobile.com/constitution, find a plan that works for you, and join us here. Be sure to use the code Constitution at checkout, and they'll even give you free activation. So again, go to patriotmobile.com/constitution, find the plan that you want, use the code Constitution at checkout in order to get free activation. And while you're out there on the World Wide Web, check out AmericaOutloud.news. I stop by there every day for news and information. You should do the same thing. But I'm going to ask you to do a little bit more. Don't just read what's there. Share it. Find the stories, find the articles, find the videos, the podcasts, something that speaks to you, and share it with friends, with family, on social media. It's actually less important how many places you share it. It changes you when you start sharing. Because when you start sharing information, you're helping all of us as we secure the blessings of liberty.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Spike proteins help viruses enter into your cells, disrupting your health and your well-being. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body of spike proteins, which allows your body to repair from within, supporting your immune and respiratory systems and regulating your inflammatory response. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing. Giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're talking about preparing the election battle space. That's right. 2024 election is going to be a battle. It's not going to be simple. It's not going to be easy. You can either join in or you can sit back and, well, let the country be taken over by other people. Now, we've talked about several ways that the battle space is being prepared, from organizations pushing registration and get out the votes to lawsuits about mail-in ballots and other things. But there's a couple other ways that we can do that that aren't directly related to the election, but they do kind of establish, I don't want to say the bona fides, but it does establish people as their position when it comes to the upcoming election. Now, I'm sure by now you're aware of the New York City lady who was arrested for trying to get the squatters out of her home. She had inherited the home. It was legally hers. People were living there. They claimed first that they had a signed lease that they could not produce, but they claimed what are called squatter's rights. There's no such thing as squatter's rights. Let me say that again. There is no such thing as squatter's rights. Squatters have no legal authority to be on someone else's property. They are trespassing. They're committing a crime. They are depriving the actual property owner of their property without due process. They're depriving of their property without, again, due process of law. Now, that's not to say that people who are renters have rights, but we're not talking renters. We're talking squatters. And of course, this got national attention because the person who legally owned the property, the person that actually had the rights to that property, was arrested because people who were there illegally were given preference. They were actually denied this woman her right. The New York City Police Department denied this person, this lady, her rights in favor of criminals. Now then, how does that shape the battle space? Well, it's an image. It can be used to define a group or entity, right? What do you see? You see New York City Police. They aren't interested in your rights. They don't want to protect your rights. They don't want to protect your property. They arrest you when someone tries to steal your property. Now, in response to this, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis recently signed a legislation that he says, quote, eliminates squatters' rights, which I've already pointed out don't actually exist. But under this new law, property owners can call the sheriff's office to immediately remove squatters from their home if the suspects are unable to produce documents authorizing their residency by the property owner. Mr. DeSantis said in a press conference, the law will give the homeowner the ability to quickly and legally remove a squatter from property, and which will increase criminal penalties for squatting. Now, we have not had the same type of issue here as we've seen in California or New York. Nevertheless, our laws are really geared towards this not necessarily being a fad. He said that this would end the squatter scam. Okay, what do you see here as far as prepping the battle space? Sure, you have a question. You know, who has the property rights? Who has the right to be there? And as I'm sure was mentioned somewhere, you know, the process becomes the punishment. In New York, it takes 30 days just to complete an investigation of whether or not the person squatting actually has a legal right to be there. Not actually adjudicated, decided in court or anything. Just to investigate takes 30 days. Now, personally, I haven't read the legislation. It sounds good, right? If I'm a homeowner and someone's squatting in my property, I go to the sheriff's office and I say, this person's squatting. As you understand it, you fill out a form. A sheriff's deputy goes out to your property, asks the squatter to produce documents that they have a legal authority to be there. If they cannot, they are removed. Seems simple to me. But again, from prepping the battle space, what do you see? He's comparing himself to New York and California. Again, we recently had a New York situation where we saw how bad it was. This is now Governor DeSantis is not running for office. He's suspended his campaign for presidency. He's not going to be president. I really would doubt that he would be considered as a vice presidential nominee for one simple fact. He resides in Florida along with Mr. Trump, which means the presidential electors in Florida could not vote for them. You see, under the 12th Amendment, the presidential electors says they shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant with the same state with themselves. So that means that if Donald Trump were to name DeSantis as his vice presidential running mate, they would immediately lose all the electoral votes out of Florida. They're not going to do that. But he may be setting himself for the next gubernatorial election. He may just be, he's doing the right thing. But part of it, I also see as shaping the electoral battle space. Now, here's another one, which, again, a little far afield, maybe. But it certainly talks about shaping the balance. See, Governor Newsom in California recently signed a climate change agreement with Sweden. And afterward, he said, "We know the playbook. We are definitely trying to future-proof California in every way, shape, or form." Now, what people are saying, and I think it's true, is that he's trying to Trump-proof California. He sees the writing on the wall. He sees that Trump has a tremendous advantage when it comes to the presidential election, and there's a high probability that he will win, and he's trying to make sure that even if Trump wins, he loses because he can't do anything in California. Now, part of what he's doing is apparently he signed an agreement with automaker Stellantis. I'd never heard of them before, but apparently they're the fourth largest automaker in the world. And Stellantis has committed to following California's emission regulations. Now, there's a couple things you need to be aware of. As I understand it, Stellantis is an automotive manufacturer that was formed by a merger of Fiat and PSA Group. Fiat, obviously, many people have heard of Fiat cars, the French PSA group. This is obviously a foreign company, isn't it not? Well, that means that any legislation, any commerce is regulated by Congress, not by California. Meaning in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, Congress has the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations. Now, as I understand it, the agreement is that Stellantis would adhere to this climate push to basically get rid of gasoline-powered cars in 10 years. They want to, you know, it's a 2035, they want to be all electric in California. Forget the fact they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the generation. Forget all the logic, reason, and physics. Let's look at this as another way, from a slightly different point of view. You have California trying to claim they are superior to the federal government, that they can make a deal with a foreign entity, and a lot of people are saying this will push Stellantis to or other car manufacturers to only make electric vehicles because, well, they don't want to make electric vehicles for California and, you know, gasoline vehicles for everybody else. Except, well, let's see, they've already got manufacturers that are ramping down their production of electric vehicles because they're having a hard time selling them. They already make gasoline powered vehicles. Now, listen. If California wants to become all EV, and I assume that's the case because it is the representatives of the people of California that are putting many of these rules and laws in place, that's part of shaping the battlefield. Governor Newsom, I believe, is doing this part as a political stunt, but part to say, see, we are the ones that can do this. And if you believe in the myth of climate change, if you believe electric vehicles will save the planet, if you believe we can turn to an all-electric economy in anything like the next decade and everything will be fine, here you go. We're California. You move here, your life's going to suck. But this in no way is going to prevent either domestic or foreign auto manufacturers from being able to provide gas-powered vehicles. But it does also shape the battlefield one other way. Because remember, who's pushing for electric vehicles today at the federal level? It's President Biden. Who's saying, well, that's stupid and it doesn't work? Presidential candidate Trump. So part of this is also, politics. It's shaping the battlefield. And Newsom thinks that taking this progressive, destructive position will improve the battlefield for him and his kind. Others disagree. And I suppose in 2024, we're going to find out. Now, ultimately, we won't know the answers until at least mid-November of this year, of 2024. For the simple reason of we've already seen the battlefield being shaped. The battle space has been shaped to delay the counting because states are allowing mail-in ballots to come in later and later, to push more towards mail-in balloting, and in many cases, decrease the security of those mail-in ballots. Whereas Montana said, no, Pennsylvania said, we want to keep a secure ballot. If you're going to mail in the ballot, you need to sign it and date it. We'll check the signature against our registration. If the date's valid, we'll accept it. If either of them are wrong or missing, we don't accept it. Some are turning around saying, how do we make it more expansive to vote? For example, like Montana, kind of a mixed decision. On the one hand, I agree that if the Montana Constitution says you can vote at age 18, you should be able to register to vote if you're going to be 18 by election day. That doesn't seem to be a big deal. But then again, they turn around and say, well, what games are we playing with identification? A little bit questionable about, do we want to have a secondary tier of identification? I'm not as big a fan of that, but then again, it's not my decision because I'm not a citizen of Montana. Second of all, when I show up to vote, I bring a driver's license. Voila, I've met the criteria, even if I were a citizen of Montana. The question I want to ask is, are you aware of any attempts to shape the battle space, the election battle space in your state, in your county? Have you talked to anyone on your county election commission, election board, whatever you have, to see if things like registration, proof of identity, mail-in voting are being used to expose the balloting process to the possibility of fraud? The possibility of it's being misused? Or are you seeing attempts to make sure that elections are free, fair, and transparent? Are you communicating with your state representatives to make sure that state law and make sure that elections are free, fair, and transparent? Because this battle space has become very important. See, the free, fair, and transparent wing lost in the 2020 elections. The drop boxes, the mail-in voting, the craziness with the validation of signatures and whatnot, the counting behind closed doors, sending people home saying you stop counting and then pick up counting without any observation. This is all a battle space that was prepared. They were prepared for it. And they didn't really pay any price for it. So we saw it again in 2022. Not as prominent because we were dealing with a a what's called an off-year election. The president wasn't on the vote, on the ballot, so we didn't draw as much attention. 2024 is a presidential election. It's going to draw a lot more attention. The battle space is important. If you give up the battle space before battle starts, you've put yourself at a tremendous disadvantage. This is something we need to pay attention to. This is something we need to be concerned with. More importantly, it's something we need to be engaged with. Because the cost of doing nothing is really, really high. And I'm not talking about who wins and loses in November. I'm talking about people actually trusting the election. If the people who lost don't trust the election, then we're in for another 4 years of accusations and recriminations and insanity because nobody trusts that these elections are accurate. Now, before I head off today, a couple favors, if you don't mind. Please head to constitutionstudy.com/Flynn movie. General Flynn's put out a movie. It airs shortly. He's got several live events he's going to be doing. You can order the DVDs. You can hear this man's side of the story. I got to meet General Flynn, and I think you need to at least hear his side. The title is Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. So again, constitutionstudy.com/Flynn movie, FLYNNMOVIE. Please use that link. It lets them know that you listened and heard about them from the Constitution Study. That's beneficial to us. Also, I hope you'll come back and join us whenever you can. The Constitution Study is on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also listen via podcast. The episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can listen in your favorite podcast app, but please leave us a rating and review. Subscribe to the show. It helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. You can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.news. Share them. Let other people know that you're sharing not just AmericaOutLoud.news, but you're helping to share the blessings of liberty.